Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Anatomy of Fear. This is going to be the first in a series of podcasts focusing exclusively on my favorite genre of horror, natural horror. As you know, I'm normally joined by my good friend Brandon, but as you've no doubt heard us talk about on the show, our schedules have been pretty tough, especially this year. Coronavirus has definitely done a number on all of us. Well, I thought I would use the opportunity to work on something that is near and dear to my heart. I originally thought Brandon and I would do one normal episode about it, but the more thoughts I put down on the page getting ready to do that this year, I found that there's just so much to talk about. So I figured, since my partner has gone and made another podcast without me, I'll do that too. I kid, of course. If anyone hasn't checked it out already, Brandon has a new sidecast where he introduces his son to classic movies and they talk about them. I highly recommend it for some light entertainment. As for my sidecast, well, I have a rather ambitious plan. I quickly realized that one podcast just wouldn't do it justice. It was always the plan to do something for November, because I'm determined to make Natural Horror November a thing. But soon, one podcast became two, and then four, and then the devil on my right shoulder straight up nuked the angel on my left and said, "No, let's do 10, because Alan doesn't need sleep, apparently. I finally settled on 8. And, well, I've gone and done it. I have them almost all in the can, and let me just say, if you love natural horror films, you are in for quite a treat. You might be wondering, Alan, why November? Aren't turkeys the only animal we're supposed to care about in November? Well, that's a good question. It's probably process of elimination. January is a boring month when nobody cares about movies because they're too busy recovering financially from holiday burnout, and February only has 28 days, so that just seems cheap. March has a whole week where people literally leave the country, and April has tax day. And like hell am I picking the month that has tax day in it. May, everyone is getting out of school and getting ready to go to summer camps and whatnot, and that's followed by June and July, months cram-packed with Marvel, Star Wars, and whatever else is big and shiny in Hollywood these days. August, kids are going back to school and parents are readjusting. Then there's October, which is horror heaven, and it would be positively criminal to limit one's horror watches to just one genre. And December is another version of June and July in terms of big-budget movies like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter. That just leaves September and November. September is a good month. It has my birthday in it, for one. But it's much like January, very boring, and people are still largely distracted by their mundane lives. Or maybe it isn't any of that, and I just like the way Natural Horror November rolls off the tongue. It's something you'll remember. At least, that's my hope. I think November is good for another reason, because, unlike January and September, I think horror fans are not inclined to get burnout post-Halloween. If anything, they would love nothing more than to just keep it going. This is how I think about November. I'm usually spending November and December catching up on whatever it is I missed throughout the year, but I'm also looking for excuses to watch movies I've never seen. You might approach this podcast from one of three different angles. Someone that doesn't know much about natural horror but is curious to know what it's about. Someone that loves natural horror already. Or someone that doesn't care for the genre but may not realize that you love these movies too. If you consider yourself the first, then you, my friend, are not going to be disappointed. My goal is to make this series the most in-depth look at the natural horror genre, relating what I believe is the essence of the genre with a close look at its best examples. Or, if you already know you love the stuff, then I would offer you perhaps a new perspective on the genre. It would be my hope to give even those like you some new ways to think about this wonderful little niche. And of course, if you're in the camp that doesn't think you like this genre, but are listening anyway because you're curious, well, hopefully I can make a believer out of you. So here's what you guys can expect. This first episode is going to be all about what exactly natural horror is, and you'll be surprised to find how tricky it actually is to define. Then, later this week, I'll publish a second episode, followed by two more per week until the end of the month. The final episode will actually be most likely posted the first week of December, and that will be a normal Anatomy of Fear episode where Brandon and I will discuss whatever Natural Horror November watches we watched this month. We will be watching a natural horror film every day for the month of November, mostly ones that we haven't seen. If you want to participate, there will be a list on our blog, with a link to it on our Facebook page. The list isn't going to be exhaustive, but certainly, if you want to follow along with this series, Most of the ones we'll be discussing will be on there. The first episodes after this one will look at each of the different types of natural horror films. In the future, I may realize that there are others, but as I see them, there are at least 5 types of natural horror, at least for now, and they'll serve as good primers for the genre. The 7th episode will look at the natural horror films of a particular country. I'm not going to say which country it is, but if you're a fan of natural horror, you probably already know which one I'm talking about. When I started getting serious about looking into this genre, I did realize some things that I never would have guessed about the genre at all. And despite my best efforts to put together the definitive horror fan's guide to natural horror, I have to confess that some of my conclusions might change over time. I'm excited by the prospects of emerging subgenres of natural horror, and I do think that we'll probably see some in the next few years. I've done my best to examine the genre thus far and break it up into categories for further review, but I've only been at it for less than a year, and I know that there's angles I've yet to fully evaluate. One such category would be the animal as friend category. Movies like Willard, about a man that befriends a bunch of rats, or White Dog, a movie about a recently reformed white supremacist that still has a dog that he trained to be hostile towards black people. Movies like these are oddballs in the genre, and I'm honestly not sure where they fit in yet, or whether I would consider them natural horror at all. So think of this as a work in progress. This is one man's best effort to create a sort of manifesto for natural horror. It will take some time, and I would love to know what you guys think, if I'm on the right track, or if you think I've missed something. So without further ado, let's talk about natural horror.
Science has agreed that unless something is done and done quickly, man as the dominant species of life on Earth will be extinct.
I hardly think a few birds are going to bring about the end of the world.
These weren't a few birds.
Air search 2-8 to base. Bees! Millions of bees!
Bees?
It's not a monster, it's just a doggy.
He permanently lost control of all of his bodily functions. There's no spider here. But I will hunt down the alleged arachnid and spread some to kingdom come.
Apex predator all day!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Life is only on Earth. And not for long.
For some, natural horror doesn't really even require much explanation. Natural horror involves threats from nature, such as animals, sea creatures, and insects, and there's not really much more to it than that, is there? Well, that does sound simple. That is, until you start asking those pesky questions like, what about other things that only theoretically exist in nature, like other dimensions or aliens or Bigfoot? And what about creatures that man has created or genetically altered in some way? Are movies like Piranha and Deep Blue Sea natural in any sense? And if they are, where do you draw the line? Also, are there forms of natural horror that don't involve living creatures at all, but merely nature itself? What if the Great Terror is an earthquake, or the eventual winter of nuclear Armageddon? And where does the line between fantasy and reality ultimately exist? And even if the events of a story are possible in the real world, are they plausible? Do they need to be scientific, or does it still count if it's merely speculative? And so on and so forth. The more you think about it, natural horror is actually pretty difficult to define. In the past, nature was pretty easy to define. It was given divine attributes. Natural horror of the past might look like the supernatural horror of today, because that's how they thought of nature back then. Natural horror, in truth, could have only existed in the last 200 years or so, because our understanding of what is natural has been redefined by materialism. I'm going to try and not get too into the weeds here, but I do think a working definition of the genre is necessary to fully appreciate all that it has to offer. But where do we start? Well, the first thing to consider might be the form of dramatic conflict. If you think back to any English lit class you may have had, you probably learned about those. They include man versus man, man versus God, man versus himself, and so on. And one of those narrative types is man versus nature. And the genre features many non-horror stories as well, like The Old Man and the Sea and Robinson Crusoe. It also includes one of my favorite short stories by Jack London called To Build a Fire, a story that is not that far removed from the horror genre. It's about a man that ignores the sage advice of an elder and embarks on a short but extremely dangerous journey through the sub-zero tundra of the Yukon. When his foot falls through some ice and gets wet, he quickly builds a fire to warm himself up but accidentally puts it out again. After failing to get another fire going, he attempts to slaughter his own dog in an attempt to use its insides to keep warm. But the dog gets the better of him and leaves him there to die of hypothermia. It's a very chilling story and remarkably bleak, as such stories can be. Sometimes it's not immediately obvious if the conflict is indeed man versus nature. To be honest, I think that's because that's not the most interesting type of conflict to most people. But on the other hand, look at Jaws. The film features man versus himself, as the sheriff struggles with his own cowardice and general spinelessness. And it explores plenty of man versus man type conflicts, such as the sheriff and the mayor, and all the three men that go out to fight the shark. But let's be honest, would anyone's butt be in the seats watching this movie if it wasn't for the damn man-eating shark? Obviously, there's another possible story that could have been told where these men work out their childhood issues, but we're here for the shark. And if you need more of an argument, go back and watch the scene where Quint tells the story of his unit getting dropped into shark-infested waters, because it basically serves as a manifesto of sorts for the natural horror genre. Okay, so primary conflict is man versus nature. Got it. What else? Well, the second rule seems to be a no-brainer, and that's the adherence to scientific materialism. Science deals only with what it can measure, and that limits it to the physical material world. The original Latin word natura is literally translated into Greek as physis, which is also where we get the word physical from. There's simply no mistaking that the threats in natural horror movies must be, in its most literal sense, natural. Once again, though, this is trickier than it sounds. Obviously, this means supernatural films that focus on the paranormal are out, and that's even taking into account the movement a century ago known as spiritualism, which attempted to take a scientific approach to the spiritual realm. But even if science is involved in the pursuit of the supernatural, I don't think anybody would consider it a natural horror film, and I don't think anybody would assume it was. Where this actually gets tricky is with creatures and phenomena that are not proven to exist, but are plausible. Here we run the risk of sounding like Pascal's Wager, saying things like, well, we don't have proof that xenomorphs exist, but we don't have proof they don't exist. The realm of speculative fiction is vast, and it would simply be foolish not to at least set some ground rules. The reality is, the fear that drives us with natural horror is not the things we don't know are out there, it's the things we do know. There really are wolves in the woods, and when they show up, you really don't have to use your imagination. There is a small subset of natural horror films, though, that speak to an aspect of science that is quite simply just a fact of reality and, when taken seriously, can be just as terrifying, and that's discovery horror. Having said everything I just said, I would also do a great disservice to science by not also acknowledging that discoveries are made all the time. They usually are not of the magnitude of, say, finding a megalodon hiding out at the bottom of the ocean, but if you look to science for ideas, you can see how such stories would fit comfortably within the natural horror genre. This can include previously unknown but plausibly existing creatures, but more often than not, it's something believed to have been extinct but turns out not to be. By far the best example of discovery horror that I've seen is the British TV show Fortitude. I'll discuss that one in greater detail in a later episode, but if you want to get the full benefit out of that episode, I highly recommend checking out Fortitude on Amazon right now and watch it to at least the end of the first season. You will not be disappointed. Okay, so natural horror is limited to a scientific worldview and has a man versus nature narrative conflict. Are we done here? Well, there is one more thing, but first, let's consider what's already been eliminated by this definition. Many slashers are natural in the sense that many of them are possible in a scientific world, but they are man versus man. Paranormal and supernatural horror films are obviously out, even though some of them skirt the boundaries of the natural. Aliens are almost always out because there is seldom any basis in reality for the creatures, making them more the realm of fantasy than reality. And even if there was some tangential relation to the real, it wouldn't feel like the horror has the essence of nature, but rather that of the nebulous unknown. It is that essence of nature herself that is the focus of natural horror more than any other. And so with that said, I would say the last key ingredient of natural horror would be the loss of control. The quickest way for any adventure to veer into horror is going to be the loss of control. The feeling that there's absolutely nothing you can do about what is about to happen. That is the essence of horror, really, but it's so critical to natural horror. A simple ant isn't enough to scare us because the threat is manageable. But increase either its size or its number, or both, then our ability to control it diminishes. I can't think of a single natural horror film in which there is not at least the threat of losing control. Often the odds are overwhelming, in fact. And that's kind of the point. At its very heart, every natural horror film is suggesting to you that nature is greater and more powerful than even the most advanced gadgets you could ever imagine. Nature is always in the driver's seat, and natural horror simply reminds you of that. This is why I truly believe that natural horror, when done right, can be some of the scariest storytelling imaginable. It brings us all back to our humble beginnings, when we were the most vulnerable. Whether you believe in God or not is irrelevant. Some characters in natural horror films make plenty of references to God, but you can always take it or leave it. Even if God made the world we live in, we're still subject to its laws, and they're elements of a universe far too great and powerful for us to comfortably tame. Being trapped in a car by a rabid dog foaming at the mouth is fundamentally no different than a town overrun by spiders or a country attacked by giant ants. The idea that we may one day find ourselves caught at the mercy of nature's machine, that is always at the back of our minds. We're always one wrong turn away from being something else's lunch. So at last, that brings us to our definition of natural horror, the definition that I'll be using throughout the series. And that is a horror story that exploits man's fear of losing control by presenting a naturally occurring but scientifically explainable non-human threat. When I look at the genre overall, I see at least five different types of natural horror films that all look and feel a certain way. Keep in mind, though, that these aren't so much trends or waves of natural horror, but are literally grouped together by the nature of the threat itself. And so examples of them exist all throughout many different ages of film. So you might expect one of them to be eco-horror. And I think that's fair. But I feel like this is a label that is all too limiting in the discussion of natural horror. I will certainly mention the genre of eco-horror throughout this series, because there's plenty of overlap with natural horror. But eco-horror is a genre all on its own. There are science fiction stories like The Day of the Triffids and The Blob that could be considered eco-horror as well, but they're not natural in any way. I also think that genres like eco-horror are diverse enough in the types of threats possible that talking about the different types of threats in natural horror is itself where we should place the most focus. I do this for a lot of reasons that will hopefully become clear as we go through them. The five categories I look at are each unique in how they present nature to us. Three of them are unique to each other, and the other two are more refined versions of the first. I'll go into much more detail with all of them in the next few episodes, but here's just a brief overview. The first is what I call true natural horror, and this is natural horror by anyone's definition. This is surely the broadest category, and it involves scenarios that are not only plausible, but actually may have already happened somewhere. It's scary because it's as real as it gets. This is where you find movies like Jaws and The Birds. These are movies where the threat is not alien to us, it's not some mutated creature. If anything is different, it's either the number of the creatures, or there's a change in their behavior. Most natural horror films probably fall into the second category, though, and that's mutation horror, which includes creatures that have mutated naturally over time, or accidentally, usually through some kind of toxic spill or something similar, or intentionally by some genetic modification. Now, this is a predictably tricky genre to talk about, because mutation horror is so plentiful. In general, if the film makes no pretense at all about explaining the mutation scientifically, and is clearly in the spirit of exploitation, then it might not be natural horror. It may even seem counterintuitive to include it at all, but again, it would be doing a great disservice to science to not acknowledge the scientific reality that mutation is an actual thing that happens. The third category I already touched on, and that's discovery horror. Like mutations, discovery horror will take some pinning down, but it absolutely deserves to be talked about. The fourth category is a type of true natural horror, and that's disaster horror, an often overlooked subgenre of natural horror which includes not only acts of God, such as earthquakes and storms, but also outbreaks, environmental disasters, and nuclear attack. Many eco-horror films fall into this category, though certainly not all. And the fifth type is isolation horror. There are enough films that follow this simple pattern within the greater category of true natural horror films that they really deserve their own look. Usually, if a natural horror film wants to make a threat scary, they make whatever it is bigger or increase the number of them. But if the story is small enough and the situation is just right, then a normal threat, becomes terrifying. This gives us movies like Cujo and 47 Meters Down and Frozen. There's something about these films that is fundamentally different in feel than all the other bigger films. I can see the potential for other categories as well. There are films that are not natural horror per se, but evoke a strong feeling of man versus nature and use the imagery of nature very heavily, that new genres might emerge that are natural horror adjacent. Well, I think I have my hands full with these, and in the next few episodes, I'll dive into what exactly they are and look at the common motifs and patterns that can be found there. I'm genuinely interested to know how many of you out there are as interested in this topic as I am. I've found, through my purely anecdotal experience with friends, that natural horror is not thought of very highly in horror, if at all. Almost any horror fan will concede to the great ones like Jaws and Cujo and some others, but largely find the genre tame and a bit silly. Perhaps the best word to convey the sentiment would be sophomoric. Maybe it's the fact that natural horror doesn't play on the unknown as much as the known. We may be frightened by what's lurking in the woods, but once we find out what it actually is, that can make it less scary. If you know what it is, you can control it. It becomes a numbers game. Do I have the tools and resources I need to beat it? A lot of times those variables are much more knowable than they are on, say, a space station with a xenomorph that you just discovered and know absolutely nothing about. Or maybe it can be just as scary, but the execution is usually what's missing. I think there's more truth to this than anything. Doing natural horror right is harder than it sounds. It seems easy at first because you already know what you're working with. You don't have to invent new rules for a dog. It's a dog. We know how dogs behave, both alone and in packs, so it almost writes itself. Actually, though, this is exactly why it's not easy. Nature may have fixed laws that don't change, but that doesn't mean the writer did his research. Doesn't he know, for example, that dogs only attack by themselves when they're being threatened? Or that rabbits don't suddenly become carnivorous when you increase their size? Or that animals don't even kill right away, usually? And for the love of God, doesn't he know that alligators don't hunt during storms? You see what I mean? I think the thing that takes most people out of it is the believability factor. And that's fair. If your genre is based on the idea that this could happen to anyone, it probably helps to show how it actually would happen and be damn sure you get it right. Some of these films are meant to be silly, but the ones that are meant to be silly are usually not trying to be scary, either. The ones that are trying to be scary, on the other hand, have to work a little bit harder to be taken seriously, so far as that goes, and mileage may vary. When I watch natural horror films, I tend to give them a little bit more slack. It's easy to make another movie about vampires because no one's really going to be that hard on you if you get a few things wrong. But if your whole film is sending the message that this is an accurate depiction of nature, then the standards for moviegoers can become impossible to meet. There was a time when natural horror films featured real live animals, reflecting a serious desire to recreate the circumstances of the story. I give major props to any filmmakers that make films with real live animals because I know how much time and work it adds to a project. There's also no substitute for the real thing, no matter how talented the special effects department may be. On the other hand, CGI has expanded the types of stories we get to see. For example, earlier this year we got a wide release of a great Dutch horror film from 2016 called Uncaged, originally released as Prey, which is about a lion that is loose on the streets of Amsterdam. It's a wildly entertaining film filled with great dialogue, bloody kills, and set in a beautiful city. Now, how easy would it have been to film a movie with this premise in a major city like Amsterdam, but using a real live lion? Probably not very. Doable, perhaps, but the choice to go with a CGI lion is not something I'm going to hate on the movie for doing. Because this is a really cool idea for a movie, and the result is a movie that is a whole lot of fun. The other thing to keep in mind, while we're talking about it, is that if you're using live animals, it limits the kind of stories you can tell. Part of the reason they used live animals so much back in the 70s was because animal rights groups hadn't really established any power in determining whether filmmakers were treating those animals well. So, we got movies like Kingdom of the Spiders, a one-of-a-kind movie because it used literally thousands of real-life tarantulas, but is generally frowned upon by actual tarantula lovers because many of the on-screen spider deaths were actually real. When you see cars running over spiders in the movie, those were real spiders. Given that many natural horror fans watch these movies because they're animal lovers, the human treatment of these animals matters to them too. For these fans, it must be exciting to see some of their favorite animals and insects depicted on screen, and it must be a thrill getting to geek out with their friends about them. They also like to pick these movies apart to determine what they got right and what they got wrong, and hopefully with love. As a lover of geology, I do this with disaster movies all the time. It doesn't take me out of it to know that Pierce Brosnan shouldn't be able to drive across a river of cooling lava, because I know it's just a movie. But others simply expect the literal world out of their movies. I'm not going to act like natural horror films shouldn't be expected to deliver on this expectation more than perhaps any other genre, but at the end of the day, I also know that it's just a movie. Well, that does it for this episode. This was just meant as an introduction to the genre and to this series. I hope you enjoyed this episode. As I said, Brandon and I will be participating in Natural Horror November all month, and if you want to participate, let us know what you're watching. If you check out any natural horror films this month, let us know what you thought of it and if you would recommend it. If you post anything on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or anything else, be sure to use the hashtag NaturalHorrorNovember and we'll try and read them on the final episode. You can also email your reviews to anatomyoffearpodcast@gmail.com and also let me know what you think of this series. Again, if you've not already subscribed to the podcast, please do so and leave a review because reviews help our rankings. I don't know how, but they do. You can also follow us on our blog, anatomyoffear.com. And on Facebook. You can also check us out on YouTube. If you're interested, you can go over there and watch the video of Russian horror films that I did earlier this year. And after Natural Horror November is over, I'll be getting back to making more videos like that one. Anyways, I hope you guys have fun this November checking out this awesome genre with me, and I'll see you guys soon. Be safe.